वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वती व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरये. Thank you very much. Reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is. Chapter 2, text 69. Following on the theme that on the one hand there is the devotional service of the Lord, on the other hand there is sense gratification. The devotional service of the Lord establishes one's intelligence or one's consciousness. And sense gratification more or less ruins it, destroys the consciousness. Text 69 now mentions that the person who is on the path of self-realization, excuse me, he is not interested in sense gratification. So it's making the point that the two are opposed more clear. Ya Misha Sarva Bhutana Tasya Jagrati Samyami Yasya Jagrati Bhutani Sa Nisha Pashyoto Mune. So the Krishna conscious person is being described here as Samyami. Yam means to control. Sanyami means completely controls. So Prabhupada writes the self-controlled. He is Jagati. What is night, Nisha, for Sarva Bhutana, all living entities? That same night is what is wakefulness for the Sanyami, the self-controlled, the Krishna conscious person. And Yasyam, in that which in which all everyone is awake, Jagrati Bhutani, that same thing, Sa, Nisha, Pashyata, the person, first he was described as self-controlled, now he's being described as the person who is introspective, Pashyata, who contemplates, who thinks, who inquires, who tries to discern, Pashyata Mune, that very sage who does this. So the things in which everyone is awake, he is not interested. That's night for him. So therefore this word Jagrati and Jagrati, they refer to being interested in, to be active in, or to pursue some path, some objective. And Nisha is referring to being not interested. Okay? It's as simple as that. It's a wonderful way of saying that... just lost it. It's a wonderful way of... it's a language, poetic at the same time very meaningful, that the sage is not interested in those things that Sarva Bhutana, most living entities, all living entities other than the sage, are interested in, which is sense gratification. And his interest, everyone else is asleep to, which is self-realization. What is night for all living beings is the time of awakening for the self-control. And the time of awakening for all beings is night for the introspective sage. So that's another point, that being an introspective sage is not a title, it's not a label, it's a very particular activity in which one is very much interested in spiritual life, and at the same time he's very self-controlled. And also, so that's what he's interested in, that's the positive. The negative is he's not interested in sense gratification. So Srila Prabhupada writes a very interesting purport. He begins by explaining that actually both parties, those who are interested in sense gratification and the person who is interested in self-realization, both of them are intelligent. He writes, there are two classes of intelligent men. One is intelligent towards material activities for sense gratification. In other words, he's very intelligent. Intelligent means he's very discerning. Very discerning. This is the way to enjoy it. He becomes, not everything will do. He wants a very particular color, a very particular fragrance, a very particular form. And that's his intelligence, how he applies it. And the other, Prabhupada writes, is introspective and awake to the cultivation of self-realization. In other words, he is using intelligence and taking a lot of interest in discriminating between all the details of self-realization. So normally sometimes we find, isn't it, that people who are worldly minded, they fall asleep when a class is going on, because it's not of so much interest, you know, all these details is like... Actually there's a very interesting anecdote. Gaura Govinda Swami, he was describing this phenomenon of sleeping during class, and he said actually normally, as you see, the context is Gaura Govinda Swami is, you know, everyone is afraid when you're in his class. He might pick on you and he might expose you for being a rascal. So everyone is expecting him to say very heavy words about the people who sleep in class. So this was very ironic, because he said, actually it's a very good sign. So coming from his mouth, that's like unheard of. He said it's a very good sign, because the living entity finally was relieved of his anxiety and his troubles, that he could finally get some good rest. That's what happened in Bhagavatam class. Normally everyone's expecting a lot of very heavy words, but so he took a very liberal and generous view. Prabhupada writes, activities, so note the significance of the word activities. It's not just professing to be a sage. Activities of the introspective sage or thoughtful man are night for persons materially absorbed. Materialistic persons remain asleep in such a night due to their ignorance of self-realization. In other words, they're not even aware, they're not even sensing the importance, and that is a sign of ignorance. It's actually a problem, but of course he doesn't know, the worldly minded person. The introspective sage remains alert, that means jagrati, in the night of the materialist man. The sage feels transcendental pleasure in the gradual advancement of spiritual culture, whereas the man in materialistic activities, being asleep to self-realization, dreams of rites of sense pleasure. So here's the contrast. Now remember, our theme for the last few classes has been that it's not just an intellectual pursuit, spiritual life. In Krishna consciousness there is an experience of pleasure, higher taste, param drishta. And the sage, the person who is interested in spiritual life, he has to be experiencing this pleasure. Otherwise, he too will be interested in sense pleasure. Pleasure is pleasure. if you don't have higher pleasure, then naturally. So there has to be this experience of spiritual pleasure. The introspective man is always indifferent to materialistic happiness and distress. In other words, he doesn't even dream of them. Dream of such pleasures. It doesn't even in his mind. He goes on with his self-realization activities undisturbed by material reactions. That means he doesn't wait for favorable circumstances. Do you see? It's funny, isn't it? That a materialist, he thinks of enjoyment even when there is no enjoyment. He thinks of it. It doesn't stop him. So likewise, the introspective sage, the Krishna conscious person, the devotee of the Lord, even when self-realization is, let's say, challenging, difficult, austere, it is cold, it is too hot, he still doesn't let go of that pursuit. So he's undisturbed by material situations. Text 70. We want to try to finish, so three more verses, this chapter. Now this verse, Lord Krishna, he goes back to the theme of being peaceful. Apuryamana achala pratishtam samudram apa pravishanti yatvat tadvat kama yam pravishanti sarve sa shanti mapnoti nakama kami. So, you know, the challenge, now Krishna is amplifying on that theme of how a devotee is not disturbed. He's not disturbed. This is the key point now, you see. In other words, you can't expect in spiritual life undisturbed spiritual life. It's going to be challenged. You can't some people say, oh, I've had a very challenging spiritual life. Actually, it would be the biggest surprise would be if you had no challenge. Because you must. So here, the one very interesting key word is achala pratishtam. So that means he is undisturbed in the face of provocation of material desires. That's, just remember that, because we'll come back to it. And another key phrase is shanti mapnoti. Mapnoti means he achieves, he reaches this peace. So apnoti is interesting. It means he finally achieves it, he obtains it, he gains it. In other words, he doesn't have it in the beginning. You see? Just remember that. Shanti is not the first thing you get. But you get it as a result of something. So we'll come back to these two points as we cover the purport. The translation. A person who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is ever being filled but is always still, can alone achieve peace, and not the man who strives to satisfy such desires. So the introspective sage and the worldly minded person, one is, what's night for one is day for the other. Now Krishna is specifically breaking it down to that one is trying to fulfill the desires and therefore he never experiences peace also. But the one who is unprovoked to fulfilling them, even when the provocation is there, that person is eligible. So the distinction between the two is peace. One has peace, the other one does not. Now, you also have to remember achala pratishtham. Achala, chala means moving, and achala means unmoving, steady, steady, fixed. So, achala pratishtham has the significance that his buddhi, his intelligence, his consciousness is not disturbed, is not spoiled. Remember that word, buddhi pariyavatishtate, remember yesterday? That by this process, his buddhi is established. Look in your Bhagavad Gita, have a look. It's just one or two verses back. Buddhi, and remember the process of sense gratification ended in buddhi pranashyati. You remember that? If you don't remember, please put your hand up. Okay. Just turn a few pages. It's there. Have a look. Huh? 63 and 65. Fine, good. Okay, so there you see in one case you lose your buddhi, in the other case you establish your buddhi, you gain it, you protect it. So here, achala pratishtha means when your buddhi, now remember the word buddhi here is meaning consciousness. And remember consciousness of a sadhana bhakta, person doing regular devotional service with a higher taste, his consciousness is not spoiled if he does not chase after material desires that come like a river. Okay. So you have two comparisons here. On the one hand, achala pratishtha, whose consciousness is not disturbed, and the kama kami. Okay. That's the two people being contrasted. The person who tries to fulfill every desire that comes, and then the person who is undisturbed by every desire that comes. So, in other words, in Buddhi Yoga, in Krishna consciousness, one will have this choice. Does he fulfill every whim that enters his mind, or does he resist? And he can only resist if he has a higher taste. Now the other word is pravishanti. Pravishanti means these thoughts do enter. You can't expect a life where the thought doesn't even enter. The difference between a yogi and a karmi is not that the yogi doesn't have desires come. It's just that he does not pursue them. But the karmi does. The kama kami. The person who tries to follow every whim, every thought of sense gratification. Srila Prabhupada writes, although the vast ocean is always filled with water, it is always, especially during the rainy season, being filled with much more water. The ocean remains the same, steady. It is not agitated, nor does it cross beyond the limit of its breadth. So this has been compared to the person who is apuryamanam samudramapa pravishanti. That he is like the ocean, achala pratishtam. He does, even though much more water is coming in, it's still the same. In other words, your thoughts of sense gratification are coming, but you do not respond to them. That is also true of a person fixed in Krishna consciousness. As long as one has the material body, the demands of the body for sense gratification will continue. That means kama yam pravishanti. The body is there, the desires for the body will come. And like a river. In other words, they don't come like a trickle, you know, once. They come all the time, flowing, non-stop. The devotee, however, is not disturbed by such desires because of his, a very interesting phrase here, because of his fullness. In other words, he is already complete. If you feel incomplete, then naturally you'll say, well, yes, of course I've got room for desire. Please, please come. We will give you all attention. What would you like? Cold, hot? How much? So we become, you know, victimized because of our incompleteness, our being non-full in ourselves. So that's where Prabhupada is using the word puryamanam. Apuryamanam and puryamanam. He is full. A Krishna conscious man is not in need of anything, because the Lord fulfills all his material necessities. I'm reminded of recently one devotee was explaining, I forget where, but here in Vrindavan recently, that Srila Prabhupada, towards the end of his stay in this earth, his godbrothers asked him, would you like anything? Aapki ichha hai? Aapki koi ichha hai? He was asked in Hindi. And Prabhupada's response was, koi ichha hai? I have no desire. So here, Prabhupada is writing, a Krishna conscious man is not in need of anything, because the Lord fulfills all his material necessities. So he has no want. Therefore, he is like the ocean, always full in himself. So Prabhupada gives the example of desires flowing like a river. And again, he refers to the fact that achala pratishtham here means he's steady in his activities. Not just his consciousness, but his service is undisturbed. Sometimes devotees, they're performing the devotional service, and sometimes they say, oh, I'm too disturbed to do it. You see? Have you had this phenomenon? Somebody else or yourself maybe? I mean, I'm too disturbed. So Krishna is saying that achala pratishtham means that actually he doesn't let it affect his service, this desires or a provocation. See, sometimes we think, well, it wasn't a desire. He is responsible. He is giving me trouble. And we think that's not desires. But actually it is. Because if you go back to those two verses, Jayato Vishyan Punsa. So from contemplation to attachment to lust, then there's anger. Anger is when you say, he's the cause. He is the troublemaker. So the root of that was our desire. Really, a Krishna conscious person, and Prabhupada is going to write this in a few chapters, if you can remember a few chapters later, that a devotee does not allow another person to disturb his devotional service. There is a purport, partly I've forgotten, that's why I can't give you the reference, but it's there, that a devotee does not allow another person to disturb his devotional service. So here is what he's saying. He's steady in his activities. Achala pratishtham. And he is not even slightly disturbed by desires for sense gratification. So that's his shanti, that's his peace. That, Prabhupada now writes, is the proof of a Krishna conscious man. Meaning, one who has lost all inclinations for material sense gratification, although the desires are present. Very clear. Because he remains satisfied in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, he can remain steady like the ocean and therefore enjoy full peace, shanti, upload. Now Srila Prabhupada says that this shanti is not possible if you are kama-kami, trying to fulfill every desire. Others, however, who want to fulfill desires, even up to the limit of liberation, Prabhupada is including the desire for liberation as trying to fulfill your desires. what to speak of material success never attain peace. The fruitive workers, the salvationists, and also the yogis who are after mystic powers are all, in other words, everyone other than the devotee, are all unhappy because of unfulfilled desires. So, that's the point. The devotee doesn't have unfulfilled desires. Everyone thinks, you know, they wonder at this, well, you know, the devotee doesn't have unfulfilled desires. We think, well, I'm a kind of a devotee, but God, I would like something. I would like this. In fact, I have it on my Excel sheet if you'd like to, you know, it's a long number list. Now, that's because we miss the key. The key was that there is all fulfillment in just doing service for the Lord, in that higher taste, in that relationship with Krishna, which is available to even the neophyte. It's not one of the mistakes in Krishna consciousness, those who adopt Krishna consciousness, is they think that a relationship with Krishna is only possible when I'm very advanced. That's a mistake. Actually, Krishna makes himself available even to the person who only begins the path. Prabhupada finishes off by saying, in fact, he does not even desire liberation from the so-called material bondage. The devotees of Krishna have no material desires, and therefore they are in perfect peace. You know, the implication is that if one is not happy in his service, he is actually not in Krishna consciousness. Something to think about. And by the way, this is the answer to one of Arjuna's questions. Kim asita, how is he situated? How is this devotee situated? So this is what Krishna has answered. Text 71. Here the Lord emphasizes that to give up all desires means to give up proprietorship, the sense of ownership, the sense of something belongs to me. So it means that. Vihaya kaman yat sarvan pumans charati nispriha nirmamo nirahankara sashanti adikachati. Vihaya. So vihaya, Prabhupada writes, giving up. It also means ha. Vihaya, ha, to relinquish, abandon, to resign, to let go. Vihaya, what? Kaman, material desires for sense gratification. And translation is, a person who has given up all desires for sense gratification, who lives free from desires, who has given up all sense of proprietorship and is devoid of false ego, he alone can attain real peace. So this is Krishna's different ways of, he's speaking of peace. It's a bit like what Krishna spoke when he told about the soul. In so many verses, the soul is like this, na jayate indriyate, dehinasmin. So here Krishna is speaking about the real situation of peace is one where you're free from desires. Even though they're flowing, you do not seek to fulfill them. And he doesn't have a false ego, he doesn't have a sense of proprietorship, and he also he has a way of living that doesn't necessitate fulfilling any desires. Okay. So this is described as vihaya kama nispriha nirmama nirahankara. So for, if you like, definitions symptoms, four symptoms for a person who has real peace. So Srila Prabhupada, he first takes the theme that the person who has Krishna consciousness, buddhi, is situated, is rightly situated. To become desireless means not to desire anything for sense gratification. In other words, desire for becoming Krishna conscious is actually desirelessness. Prabhupada is clarifying that you can't be in a state of desirelessness, but you can be desireless of sense gratification and to be desiring Krishna consciousness. And now he, the other part, this part of this description is actually going back to text 61. Have a quick look. It's the word matpara. In other words, in relationship with me. So, in other words, we're not talking about every desire, but desires that are not in relationship with Krishna. So, vihayaka, desirelessness means to desire for Krishna, and nirmama and nirahankara are similarly understood as elevated, those were my notes, that's not Prabhupada's book word. Nirmama, nirahankara are similarly understood as elevated stages of Krishna consciousness. Okay, that was going back to matpara. To understand one's actual position as the eternal servitor of Krishna without falsely claiming this material body to be oneself and without falsely claiming proprietorship over anything in the world is the perfect stage of Krishna consciousness. People often lament thinking, these are my possessions. They do have a, this idea of ownership, proprietorship is actually very deep because many people's lamentation is born of if there's a threat to their possessions, they become aggrieved. It's disturbing. So it's not so easy, but a devotee actually is free from this sense of proprietorship. One who is situated in this perfect stage knows that because Krishna is the proprietor of everything, everything must be used for the satisfaction of Krishna. The problem with proprietorship is one doesn't use it for Krishna. He wants to save it. Money, assets, power, control. He thinks if I let go I'll be ruined. Arjuna did not want to fight for his own sense satisfaction, but when he became fully Krishna conscious, he fought because Krishna wanted him to fight. For himself, there was no desire to fight, but for Krishna, the same Arjuna fought to his best ability. Real desirelessness is desire for the satisfaction of Krishna, not an artificial attempt to abolish desires. The living entity cannot be desireless or senseless, but he does have to change the quality of the desires. So therefore a person who knows that everything belongs to Krishna, Ishavasyam Idam Sarvam, does not, meaning he cannot, falsely claim proprietorship over anything. So transcendental knowledge is based on self-realization. In other words, it's based on knowing who I am perfectly, that I am not this body. Prabhupada writes, knowing perfectly well that everyone is an eternal part and parcel of Krishna, and that everyone is spiritual in his identity, not material, not the body. And then Prabhupada says, this understanding of Krishna consciousness is the basic principle of real peace. See, here's the thing. We attach a lot of value to our possessions. That's okay. Let's take the generous point of view. Let's not be harsh. Let's not decry the fact that the person feels a sense of security from his possessions. Is that right? Would it be fair to say? You know? But think through this just as a mental exercise. He holds on to them for dear life. all his life. But you know how it is. They always manage to get away from your fingers. You're like money. Let's just take money, for example. Let's suppose you're trying to protect it. Taxes take it away. The rickshaw wala, little by little. This, you know, fruit, the clothing, the shopping, an accident, medicine, you know, you're protecting and it's going away. And at the end, it's all taken away. It is taken away. No matter how generous we are, nobody is able to take even 1 cent with him. Okay. Now look at it on the other side. On the other side, you might say, well, a person who doesn't have it, he's a wretched person. He's really bad situation. But if he has Krishna, he thinks, well, I don't own this. Now, by the way, he may be rich, but he doesn't have the sense of proprietorship. What is his loss exactly? So he uses it for Krishna. He doesn't have it available. But you see, he has a sense, if he is not doing it artificially, and he genuinely has this taste of Krishna in his life, he is feeling peaceful. Think about that for a moment. He is not disturbed. That's if he experiences Krishna. Now if let's suppose he doesn't experience Krishna, now the one thing he had for his security, he lets go. He's going to be very sorry. You know, he's going to be very, very sorry for himself and lament. So therefore you have to have a genuine experience of Krishna. That's the point. Otherwise you can't do this text 71. You cannot nirmama, nirahankara, you know, you cannot do it. And therefore you cannot experience peace because you're always in anxiety. So the last verse, and this is an interesting verse because in this verse, Krishna explains what is the final goal of all this, of a Krishna conscious person who didn't have a sense of proprietorship, of ownership, of possession, of a false ego. So the ultimate goal, Krishna says, this is what he attains. Esha brahmi sthiti partha naina praptya vimuyati stitvasayam antakalepi brahma nirvanam richati. Esha brahmi sthiti partha. Esha, in this way situated in this way, brahmi, this spiritual situation, sthiti, na enam prapya vimuyati, he is never bewildered. Stitva asya stitva asyam antakale, and if he is so situated till the end of his life like this, brahma nirvanam, he enters the kingdom of God, richati, he attains. Just you might be interested to know the root word for richati is the syllable ri, and ri has the meaning to move, to rise, advance, to reach. So richati. Anyway, just interesting for those who care for these things. Just the syllable ri, the vowel, has the meaning that one attains. Okay, so Prabhupada is going to explain the word Brahma Nirvanam at some length, and that it's not... I'll take the opportunity to explain this about it before we hear Srila Prabhupada. We are a little conditioned to think of these words in a way that we've come across them before coming to Krishna consciousness. We think these are the domain of the Mayavadis. They use the word Brahma, the Buddhist, Nirvana, you know, we think. But actually, they have abused the word. These words do not have the meaning that they have given to these words. These words have the meaning which Krishna intends, and which mean here, spiritual kingdom. So this is our problem, not the problem in the Gita. Sometimes people say, well, why does Krishna use such words, Brahma Nirvana? Why didn't he just say, He comes to my abode. You know, Goloka, why didn't he say Goloka Vrindavan, for example? In Sanskrit, he is saying Goloka Vrindavan. But because we have, over the centuries, everyone associates these words in the way the impersonalists and voidists have begun to use them. So Esha is referring to this state of Krishna consciousness, okay? So Esha's Brahmi Stiti Partha, Esha's Brahma Stiti Partha. That is the way of spiritual and godly life, after attaining which, Enam Prapya, a man is not bewildered, na vimuyati. If one is thus situated, even at the hour of death, one can enter into the kingdom of God. Antakalyapi. Stitva asyam antakalyapi. Even at the time of death, if he's like this, situated in Krishna consciousness. So not only he has peace in this life, his next life is spiritual. So that's the benefit of letting go the shelter, the so-called shelter of possessions. So you might think that's a big thing. Why should I let go? I will be vulnerable. I'd be, you know, defenseless. But if you have a relationship with Krishna, you have nothing to fear. So let's see what Srila Prabhupada says. One can attain Krishna consciousness or divine life at once, within a second. Remember that word just yesterday's class, ashu, immediately. Or one may not attain such a state of life even after millions of births. It is only a matter of understanding and accepting the fact, and in other words, there is a difficulty to let go of our conditioning, bodily conditioning. First we think I'm the body. Remember all the way back, chapter 2, text 11, 12, 13, I think I'm the body. And then based on that idea, we think bodily possessions are mine. It's all a mistake. You're not the body. And the bodily possessions will do nothing for you other than bewilder you. They'll simply bewilder you. Remember that verse? Yavasaya atmika buddhi ekyakura. Bahu shakhai anantascha buddha yogi. We become bewildered by everything about us. So, Prabhupada is saying, it is a matter of understanding and accepting the fact of all this body of knowledge. I am the soul. I am not this body. And not only that, I have a relationship with Krishna. And if I pursue that life, I will taste param drishtva. I will have peace in this life and I will attain the spiritual world at the end. Antakalyapi. Even at the moment of death, if I am in this situation, in this consciousness, I will go Brahma Nirvana, I will attain. So Khatvanga Maharaj, Prabhupada writes, attained the state of life just a few minutes before his death by surrendering unto Krishna. Now Prabhupada devotes his purport explaining the word Nirvana and Brahma Nirvana. Nirvana means ending the process of materialistic life. According to Buddhist philosophy, there is only void after the completion of this material life. But Bhagavad Gita teaches differently. So that's why Nirvana, because that's the Buddhist idea. But the word Nirvana doesn't mean that. Okay. Nirvana means ending this life, bodily life. But it doesn't presuppose that there is no other life after this. It's a bit like the gross materialists, they think everything's finished when you die. It's all over. You know, there's nothing. You're in the grave. They think you are the body. So if somebody assumes their idea, then they'll think Nirvana means you're completely finished. According, so we just read according to Buddhist philosophy. The Bhagavad Gita teaches differently. Actual life begins after the completion of this material life. For the gross materialist, it is sufficient to know that one has to end this materialist way of life. But for persons who are spiritually advanced, there is another life after this materialistic life. Before ending this life, if one fortunately becomes Krishna conscious, he at once attains the stage of Brahma Nirvana. There is no difference between the kingdom of God and the devotional service of the Lord. So this is the point. If you are situated in devotional service of the Lord, in this life, before death, you have already attained the kingdom of God. Since both of them are on the absolute plane, to be engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord is to have attained the spiritual kingdom. In the material world, there are activities for sense gratification. There are activities of sense gratification. Whereas in the spiritual world, there are activities of Krishna consciousness. Attainment of Krishna consciousness, even during this life, is immediate attainment of Brahman. Meaning, one who is situated in Krishna consciousness has suddenly already entered into the kingdom of God. Brahman is just the opposite of matter. Therefore, Brahmasthiti means not on the platform of material activities. And then Prabhupada says, therefore, Brahmasthiti is liberation from material bondage. So now Prabhupada just says that, summarizing, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has summarized the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita as being the contents of the for the whole text. Prabhupada gives an explanation. In the Bhagavad Gita, the subject matters are Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. In the second chapter, Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga have been clearly discussed, and a glimpse of Bhakti Yoga has also been given as the contents for the complete text. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purpose of the second chapter of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of its contents. Now, I'd just like to finish before I invite questions by adding this point. There is a kind of reluctance, an aversion to the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Permit me to, I'll invite any disputes at the end. There is a general reluctance and aversion to seeing whether Bhagavad Gita is so very relevant to me, especially after I've been many years in the movement. And we wonder what it can do for me, what particular significance, what did I miss out, that you know, what was so big in there. Actually, my contention is, summarizing this overview now after a few weeks, is that the second chapter actually plays a very important role in the life of a person who seeks to become Krishna conscious. And we should overcome this aversion that is there to the second chapter. It doesn't look appealing. It doesn't look like, you know, high elevated stuff. It looks too simple. I'm not the body, don't be attached, don't contemplate the object of senses, give up sense gratification. But that's because most people's impression of the second chapter, they have missed this very significant one point in there, and that Krishna was speaking of a higher taste. And he speaks of the higher taste at some length. You know, he speaks of the higher taste at some length. And the significance is that you can give up sense gratification, you can give up proprietorship, you can give up thinking I'm the body only when you have a direct relationship with Krishna. That's in the second chapter. People miss this. And I believe there's nobody else to blame but yourself. It's Krishna did not hide it, Prabhupada did not disguise it. It wasn't locked up, it wasn't in special language. It's very plain, open. But because we have this, we become cheated. We become cheated because we're looking for something else. We don't believe that Krishna has given me what I'm looking for. And we don't want to hear this idea, I have to give up, I have to surrender. It's also, remember that yesterday we discussed, it sounds fanatical. Right? Remember that topic? It sounds fanatical. It sounds too simple. It sounds crazy. But there it is. There's the answer. I think the second chapter is the most underrated chapter in the whole Gita. And I believe if it was properly understood, it would benefit the devotee tremendously. Especially the sense that Krishna is saying, have a higher taste. Then you can give up the lower taste. I think Krishna is making it very clear that he doesn't expect you're able to give up anything unless you have a higher taste. His language is such, he doesn't expect anybody to be able to give up unless he has a higher taste. And Krishna is inviting us to have that. And so, if we want to benefit ourselves, to bless our own lives, we will do well to read carefully Bhagavad Gita chapter 2. So thank you very much. Are there any questions?